Welcome, everyone, to episode 190 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we need to discuss an attempted mutiny by the Chicago Bulls, another blockbuster trade, this time involving fan favorite Matthew Dellavedova, and Joel Embiid being unhappy with his role in Philly since the Jimmy Butler trade. Before we get to all of that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian, because I've had an idea. Shouldn't you and I create, like, a, what do you call it, leadership committee?
I was going to ask, are you going to attempt to throw me overboard at any point during this podcast?
if I'm Jim Boyland, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Not sure. Exactly. So, Mort, I know our last episode was all Bulls, so we're going to consolidate the Bulls talk this time. But
yes,
that's been please. The talk of NBA Twitter and really the entire NBA for the last 48 hours. So we just got to start with the Bulls again. So, Jim Boylan takes over as head coach after they fire Fred Hoiberg. He starts running these like military-style practices. He's saying the team's conditioning is awful, so they're multi-hour doing push-ups, wind sprints, suicides, all that good stuff. They go in and play the Celtics on Saturday night, get beat down by 56 points. The worst loss in franchise history, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
Great. In the first half and the second half, he does the full like line shift 5-man substitution because he's not happy with how the starters are playing. And in the second half, it happened like within a minute, which really pissed them off. After the game, he says, well, good thing is now the starters aren't tired. We can run another heavy practice tomorrow, keeping in mind they're just fresh off of a back-to-back. So the Bulls, in theory, are going to have this ridiculously hard practice Sunday morning. The players start texting Saturday night and Sunday morning. They say, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't come to practice. Like, what happens if we just don't show up? Robin Lopez and Lauri Markkanen talk them out of it. They do show up, but instead of practicing, they first have a players-only meeting, then they meet with the coach himself. There's also a report out there, I think it was Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports, who said they also reached out to the National Basketball Players Association on Sunday because of what they felt were extreme tactics by Jim Boylan. So, Mort, we already touched on the whole Garpax angle last week, so I want to focus on, on Boylan and the team right now. But, like, where do they go from here after this week?
Well, you left something out, which I think is very crucial.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Over the course of that last week, Boylan has consistently mentioned that he used to work with Greg Popovich.
Right.
Like, that's been a consistent factor in the way that he's coached. Yeah. And the players have reacted to this more or less by saying, well, you know what? You're not Greg Popovich.
Right.
Because he kind of argued, hey, the 5-man sub, that's something Pop did.
Yeah.
And the way that he coached, that's what Pop did.
Right.
Yeah, but Pop gets more leeway than a guy who's had, three head coaching games under his belt. Well, four, because he took over for Hoiberg when he was sick once. But, you can't compare a guy who's won 5 NBA championship and, literally hundreds of guys. I don't remember if Pop has broken the 1,000 win mark. I think he has.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, there's just no comparison. And just using Pop as sort of this, example,
right,
is just so dumb,
yeah,
and insulting to the intelligence of the players, honestly.
Right.
So in terms of asking me, where do I think it goes from here? Not better. Not better whatsoever. Because management apparently is fully on board on the crazy train right now. They actually came out of this, with the whole world saying, this is wrong, this is wrong. Bulls management said, oh, this is so right. This
right.
is so right. This works. We are even more in love with this hard-nosed coach than we were before, which I find a little bit ironic because part of the reason they fired Tibbs, if I'm not mistaken, was the whole, oh, he's too hard on his players. He's not a player's coach ideology.
Right.
So, Yeah. Guess what I'm saying is I'm sensing a pattern.
Right.
Because let's go back. You had Scott Skiles back in the day, was replaced by Vinny Del Negro, a player's coach, who was replaced by Tom, who was replaced by Fred, who was replaced by Boylan.
Yeah.
So the next guy is going to be a human marshmallow?
It's like a pendulum swinging in both directions, but they can't stop it in the middle. Like, it's just one extreme to the other, back and forth.
Which really boils down the guard pack experience over the past 15 years.
Right. I mean, to your point, so Malika Andrews of ESPN reported, you know, John Paxson, the team president, has committed to Boylan beyond the season, which, quote, appears to have given Boylan more latitude to be perhaps more aggressive. She said, Paxson and general manager Gar Forman are fully supportive of Boylan's hard-driving changes with the Bulls, including Sunday's meeting, the longer, harder practices, and the more confrontational, intense style. Both Paxson and Forman attended the meetings with the players Sunday morning at the practice facility. So, to your point, I mean, they're on board with this. Like, this is coming from the top down.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly the players are not on board with this.
Nor should they. I was actually hoping that they wouldn't have shown up.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, at this point, I just want more drama, honestly.
Well, I'm with you. You know, like, you raise a fair point that he keeps saying, like, well, Popovich did it, and I'm trying to emulate Popovich. But Popovich built up that goodwill over time. But as you said, becoming one of the winningest coaches in NBA history, and, you know, he really cares for his players off the court. This guy just coming in, like, guns blazing. You need to, like, establish a rapport with these players. I know he's been an assistant for a while, but your role changes as the head coach, and you need to build up that trust and build up that rapport instead of just coming out and treating them like high school kids. Like, these are grown-ass men.
Right.
They're professionals. I know they're not playing well. I know they're one of the worst teams in the NBA. But if you treat them like college kids, I know they're all still really young, but, like, there's a balance you need to find first before you can just come in and be like, you know, the hard ass military guy. Because if you do that, this first impression matters. And I'm concerned for the Bulls and for their fans that the players aren't going to forget this. Like, he may have lost the team already, which is ironic given that they just fired the coach for allegedly losing the team.
Well, here's the thing. He never had it.
Right.
He never had the locker room because, you know, unofficial reports, meaning, you know, what you hear and from second or third tier sources, you know, he was never a favorite amongst the players. Mm. Like, he was just hired after the firing of Fred, and the players were just, ugh. We've known this guy for 3 years. You know, he's nothing special. Right. Like, there is no ounce of respect there. There hasn't been before, and there isn't now. So that, and I think you need to take that into consideration when you're hiring a coach or you're promoting someone else. Like, what is the current rapport of this guy with the team? Mm-hmm. And 3 years in and having, you know, won over the respect of that team, that's a red flag to me, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So do you think there's, you know, I asked this question last week and you basically said no, but now that things got even worse, do you think there's any hope they pull out of this tailspin now that marketing's back? You know, Chris Dunn came back last night. They're starting to get a little bit healthier.
Define tailspin. Winning games is one thing. Mm-hmm. Like, the drama is the tailspin.
Right. Yeah. Do you think they can pull out of that part?
No. Over the past 7 years, what has been the one constant surrounding the Chicago Bulls?
Turmoil.
Drama.
Yeah.
Like, John Paxson almost beat Vinny Del Negro. Like, right. we lose sight of fact, sight right. of that. I mean, my point is, you know, it's... No, I mean, the Bulls could win. They could be a 500 team moving forward for the rest of the season, theoretically, and that would be a great basketball result.
Right.
But it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Again, I mean, I'm just trying to be truthful here. It's not going to matter. And Boylan apparently believes that, oh, they have a great chance at luring free agents this next summer.
Right.
Like, this is not going to hurt the free agent process, you know? Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, I don't think you should count on that, bro.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure a lot of free agents are lining up to play for a 6-22 team that has a super hard-ass coach.
Right. And you know, players talk and nobody likes guardbacks on right. that team.
Right.
And that is, you know, well-known around the league that you can't trust those guys. Mm-hmm. So... Yeah, no, it's all bad. And before we lock up the Bulls, Brian,
yeah,
can we just give a shout out to Ricky O'Donnell?
Yes, yeah. If you haven't seen it today, Ricky, it took him a while to channel his rage, I guess, but he finally did so. Put out a piece on SB Nation about why John Paxson needs to fire himself. Basically, just goes through the last 15 years of his management, and as you alluded to, Mort, especially the last half decade or so has just been a pure tire fire. And it's, you know, it seems like the owner, Jerry Reinsdorf, is not going to do it. So
right.
if Paxson doesn't fire himself, which admittedly seems like a stretch, it just seems like this might go on in perpetuity.
I mean, I don't smoke, but I needed a cigarette after we
yeah. It was just pure fire all around. Shout out to Ricky for that.
Glorious. Glorious. Yeah, and a friend of the podcast. We've had him on.
We indeed. So let's shift gears more. I guess we're actually going to stay in the Central Division because we had another giant blockbuster trade the other day. I think it was Friday night. We had Matthew Dellavedova going right. back to Cleveland along with John Henson and a pair of draft picks in 2021, a first-round pick and a second-round pick. The Bucks get George Hill and Sam Decker from the Cavs. And then Milwaukee then traded Decker to Washington for Jason Smith and a future second round pick. How do you like Correct. The deal for, let's start with Milwaukee.
So initially when I saw that deal, my immediate reaction was, wow, Milwaukee kind of overpaid to get George Hill in.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point in time, I had completely forgotten that he only had a $1 million guarantee for next season.
Yep.
Meaning they basically acquired a certain level of cap space.
Yeah.
And a decent player at the same time. You know, and so I like it from that perspective. I do think, however, it is, I don't want to say it's weird, but I was thrown off that Milwaukee actually played the free agency game, which they are essentially doing, like, long term.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is a year where they could legitimately be a finals contender.
Right.
So I was kind of wondering why they would sacrifice all that to get George Hill in. Like, don't get me wrong, a locked in and focused George Hill is actually a damn good player.
Yeah.
And you know what? He might turn into that in Milwaukee. Like, Bud might actually open his game up a little bit more. If that's true, go for it. And then mm-hmm. they might not even, you know, sacrifice anything in the short term. It just all depends on a lot of the moving parts that we need to figure out how are going to be moving forward.
Right. Yeah, I think Milwaukee's rationale here is, one, their backup point guard spot was just a little bit shakier than you would hope for
yeah.
what would, you know, theoretically be a finals contender. George Hill's going to fix that very quickly. I mean, he played for the Cavs last year and made it to the finals, and that should help a lot. Henson also, you know, to your point about the free agency stuff, Henson I think he's signed for one more year. He's owed $8.7 million next year. Mm. And then Delly as well. I believe his contract goes through Dellavedova. Yeah.
Yeah, another year. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a lot of money to free up. And, like, I don't know that they're necessarily going to play the free agent game. I don't think they're trying to necessarily, like, lure another free agent. But they just have a lot of guys they need to resign. Assuming, you know, Chris Middleton, for one, is mm-hmm. going to get maxed. I think it's fair to assume at this point that he's going to get maxed, whether in Milwaukee or somewhere else, just because of the supply and demand of, like, these right. top-tier guys. And, you know, if KD stays with the Warriors, Kawhi stays with Toronto, Jimmy Butler stays with Philly, like, all these teams, the Knicks, the Lakers, all these teams, the Bulls, that have been saying, we're going to get this star free agent in 2019, the market's just not going to have enough guys to be that star free agent on the move, so someone's going to pay up for Chris Middleton. Eric Bledsoe is also a free agent. I mean, they're limited in what they can offer Brooke Lopez, but I'm going to assume they're going to try to re-sign him as well. So,
oh, for sure.
Yeah, so I think that's probably more their thinking. It's not necessarily like a free agent thing. I think it's more like, we need to duck the tax. We wouldn't be able to retain all of those guys, plus be playing, you know, Delly is getting paid $9.6 million next year. So what? That's almost $18 million right there between Delly and Henson that they potentially shed next season. I think that just helps them ducking the tax next year. And then this, you know, like, neither one of those guys were really making a gigantic, you know, Henson played 14 games for them. Delly played 12. They weren't making a huge impact. So I think it's, really, it's a upgrade this year on their prospects, because Hill's going to be more of a rotation player for them than the other two guys. And then also moving forward, it, you know, it helps them out potentially retaining their guys or making other moves in free agency. And it costs them a first round pick, as well it should. I think it was, you know, as you said, it's a lot to give up, but for shedding $18 million in salary next year, I think it's a fair price.
The thing I was looking at also, because you mentioned, you brought up Bledsoe. Mm-hmm. I was kind of looking at it as well as, if they lose Bledsoe, because he's an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah.
You know, he could leave for anyone.
Sure.
Like, then you had the option of just, like, not waiving George Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then running with him as your starter next year.
Because his salary, I know there's a guaranteed date on it, but I want to say it's not until, like,
it's July 1st, actually, oh, but at that it? Point, so okay. So you would have to rely on, you know, intel and back channels.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, and I know no NBA teams ever does that. So,
right.
So you need to gauge what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Thing is, like, because you just brought up something that you've actually brought up several times on this pod, which is very interesting, and that is the amount of players versus the amount of money available this summer.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Bledsoe, no, don't get me wrong, fine player.
Yeah.
But this dude could get paid in an open market.
You're right.
And you have to wonder if Milwaukee is looking at that situation going, you know what, we're not that keen on potentially paying Eric Bledsoe $25 million a year for 3 years.
It's a really good call. Yeah. He's not even, like, on my radar as a guy who's going to get overpaid, but you're so right. He is definitely going to get overpaid, like,
oh, for wild. Sure.
Yeah.
So here's more Tautek. Eric Bledsoe is gone by the trade deadline.
Ooh. That is a hot take. I like that. Because you think they're aware of what's coming. They don't want any part of it. And they could keep George Hill for next year.
They can. And then, you know, you're not going to get anything of major significance for Eric Bledsoe.
Yeah.
Because he's a free agent.
Sure.
But, like, whatever you can get, like, take it. I mean,
that's interesting. I mean, I could understand that rationale, and I think it's fair. I don't know. Yeah, I guess it just depends.
It would sacrifice the now.
Right, it depends on what they could get for him. Like, if they could get a first-round pick, maybe, but, like, they do have a legit chance to make the finals this year. Yeah, I don't think that sends a good message to Giannis, and they need to keep an eye on that with him, you know, like...
Right.
Teams are already lining up to just snake around. You know, he's signed for 3 more years, but if you trade a guy who can really help your cause this year, I do think Milwaukee has to worry about that somewhat, but it's a fair point. I mean, they just gave themselves a good backup plan if Eric Bledsoe leaves, or if he gets priced out or whatever.
Sorry to interrupt, I just got to ask you this. What is, like, a stronger signal to Giannis, though?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we lost your guy for nothing. Or, hey, we saw the writing on the wall, and we at least got something in return that can help you.
Yeah, I mean, again, it'll come down to what they could get for him. But I think if they trade Bledsoe for, like, a prospect and a pick, that's not... Neither one of those guys are going to help this year, like... Obviously, the pick won't, because it won't be the NBA. then right. Giannis has to sit there and wonder, like, damn, dude, could we have made the finals if we didn't trade Eric Bledsoe? Like, could we have beaten Toronto or Boston or Philly or whoever and, like, made some real noise in the playoffs, but instead, because my ownership is cheap and didn't want to pay Eric Bledsoe, then we lost our shot, and now I've got two more years left, and I'm getting a little frustrated.
True. But then what if they ship him to Chicago for Justin Holliday and Robin Lopez?
Now, see, that would be interesting. I think if it's for someone who can help this year, that changes the calculus a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think if it's like, if it's really just a, you know, pick and prospect or whatever, like if it's something more forward looking,
right,
that's where you start to run into problems.
But that won't be a problem, because what kind of team would offer that for Eric Bledsoe, who's on an expiring deal and would have to be looking, you know, would have to be paying him like, I don't know, $25 million a year, $26 million a year to retain him in free agency, and there's not even a guarantee.
Right.
I mean, I don't think that deal is out there.
Phoenix? Can we get...
oh, his glory is returned to Phoenix?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, but it's a tricky situation, because that was my initial reaction to it. It was like, why would you do this now? Like, why would you... And also, it's the sacrificing of the first-round draft pick that threw me, because you just know how valuable they are.
Yeah.
And what I was thinking is, if I'm Milwaukee, I probably wouldn't have used a first-rounder to get myself financial flexibility. I would have used that first-rounder in a trade, sure, but I would have used it to get a difference-maker in there.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I still get the rationale. I mean, it's not like this is insanely dumb or anything. I mean, they're... This does provide them with, and I hate this word, but flexibility.
Really. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think the only ones that really make sense for a Bledsoe dump now would be Orlando, maybe. And I just don't, maybe you get like Fournier back, or New York, I guess, Courtney Lee and something.
But, yeah. Those would make more sense, right?
Yeah. But you're right. I mean, I don't know that there are a lot of teams that make sense, especially New York can just pay him this summer, so they're probably not giving up anything of significant import. Orlando, right. Maybe, but like, who? I just don't know. I don't know how you find a workable deal. I guess it could be Fournier or like.
You want a curveball?
Sure. Don't you say John Philly? Wall. Oh, okay, good. Oh. Oh. Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on if the Bucks are willing to pay the tax, but...
That's the thing. Like, yeah. He's a souped-up Bledsoe.
Right.
And you would have to at least look at his physical decline, and you would have to look at, you know, the projections of how he's going to be over the next 4 years.
Right.
During his super-duper mega extension.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a ton of money, but that deal is there.
Yeah.
You might even get a pick.
And then Washington, that frees up some flexibility if they want it. They can just pay Bledsoe
right.
and not give him an aggressively high contract like the...
Or they could just let him go and then build around Bradley Beal and Otto Porter like they probably should be doing.
Yeah. That's interesting. That's very interesting. It is worth noting also the protection that first round pick is protected according to Zach Lowe, lottery in 2021, right. Top 10 in 2022, top 10 and 25 and 30 in 2023, top 8 in 2024, and then converts 2 seconds in 2025 if not conveyed. So lots of protections involved, but they did protect themselves from giving up like a truly, truly primo pick, which is smart. Given, you know, again, Giannis is a free agent in 2021. We don't know what this Bucks team is going to look like in 5 years. They did protect themselves from, like, absolute catastrophe.
Right.
Which is smart. Let's look at it from the Cavs side of things.
Mm-hmm.
What you think?
Meh. I mean, sure. No, look, it's fine. I just, you know... They're not going anywhere anyway.
Right.
I mean, they also took on Alec Burks earlier on. Yeah, I mean, I get where they're going with this. It's not going to turn them into, you know, a good team all of a sudden. It's not going to turn them into a more winning basketball team, which I actually think is a goal. That should be a goal. The goal should be, hey, we shouldn't get better right. now. Oh, we should become as bad as we could possibly do. Be. And then, you know, come lottery, we'll do our typical post-LeBron thing and you know, win the first round pick.
Right.
So it's fine. But it's not something where I sat there and went, oh, that's a slam dunk for him. Like, no, it's fine. Like, I'm looking at over their roster and, you know, what can you really do if you're Cleveland? Like,
yeah.
You don't have any assets, you know, to get like a high pick. Like right. They got the protected pick
yeah.
and all that. Like nothing they have from the veterans outside of Kevin Love really, you know, is going to provide them with a good, solid return.
Right.
And maybe even Kevin Love is not included in that. It depends on what the market says.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I just think this is like, as you said, they were never going to get a huge haul for George Hill. But like, this is the type of trade right. you need to make. You know, use his... It's an effectively expiring contract. As you said, it's got a $1 million guaranteed next year. But that makes it more valuable in a sense that you can use it to acquire big salaries, and then the team that's acquiring him can have the freedom to cut him for very little next year. But as you said, this is all about the pick. I mean, they took on, again, like $18 million in salary for a pretty heavily protected first-round pick, which is not super ideal, but, I mean, it's better than just letting that George Hill contract go to waste.
Agreed.
How about the Washington side of things?
Well, they got out of Jason Smith's deal.
Yeah.
So, I guess. That's fine.
Decker is okay.
Yeah.
Like, they need wing depth, especially if they're really considering trading Otto or they aren't confident in their ability to re-sign Kelly Oubre after this year.
Right. I mean, with Decker, I feel that he was better in the past. It seems like he had significantly more trade value coming in, like during his first couple of years, and he sort of plateaued a little bit.
Yeah,
but I guess there is, I think you're right. There might be a chance he could turn into something here if given the opportunity. Like he's not a bad player by any stretch. It's just a question of finding his niche,
right?
Figuring out how to get his shots. You know, what type of role is he going to get? I just have zero belief in this Washington Wizards organization in terms of doing anything structured.
Right.
I mean, they're not on the Chicago Bulls level, but they're pretty bad.
They just need, like, Otto has taken over the Trevor Ariza role of just hitting those corner threes off of John Wall, you know, drives and kicks. Like, Decker could be that guy. I mean, he's not an awful shooter by any stretch. Like, he... You know, right. he had a pretty bad year with the Clippers, but like in 20, I guess last season. But this year he shot 38.5% from three in really small sample size, admittedly. Only 13 shots, but you know, it's there. Like he's not a Ben Simmons. He's going to take 3-point shots. So if he can just stand in the corner and space the floor, that may provide some value to Washington, and for what they gave up, who cares? I mean, I think the overall point.
Oh my word! I had not seen his 3-point shooting from last year.
I know.
I really hadn't. I mean, that's a gross negligence on my part having not seen. He played in 73 games.
Yeah. Well, he only took 60 shots.
63. And he took only six. Last year. For the Clippers,
yeah,
60 threes,
yeah,
in 73 games, like 60 attempts, right. Made 10,
yeah,
and the year before he'd made 60,
yeah.
Like what the heck happened there? Yeah. I hadn't even seen that. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I mean, I think the overall point is this doesn't move the needle all that much for the Wizards, but like it's fine. And if they needed a third team to complete the deal, great. Like it's. Whatever. I mean, at least they have some control over him. I believe he's a restricted free agent after this year. So, again, it's probably insurance for Oubre or Porter or whatever.
Some team is going to give him like $7 million a year just because he's young.
Yeah, it's possible. Maybe it'll be the Wizards.
Oh, no. Like, we need to start a hashtag campaign to stop overpaying players.
We're going to have to run that a lot leading up to July. I'm just going to say yes. That much.
Yes. No repeat of 2016.
Oh, it's going to be.
Yeah, I know.
All right, let's move on to Philly. We got some news. Well, first of all, we got news about Markelle Fultz that I guess we could hit on very quickly. They diagnosed him with thoracic outlet syndrome. We were going to have a doctor come on, one of my wife's coworkers, and discuss what that is. But a lot of actual medical professionals have actually released information about that and about Fultz in the past few, or since the diagnosis anyway. So I think, hopefully, if you have not had a chance to check it out, go read about it. It doesn't sound like it's permanent. I mean, there's a wide swath of causes that could be contributing to it. You know, some people have to get like a rib removed before it gets fixed, but it sounds like right now they're just planning on having him go through physical therapy, so it doesn't sound like surgery is an option at this point. They projected him to be back somewhere between 3 and 6 weeks, and for all of you who are making jokes about the Sixers medical staff, for once it sounds like it might not totally be their fault. Because this is apparently just a really hard thing to diagnose. Like, you kind of have to do process of elimination to figure out, it's not this. Okay, maybe it's TOS. So, at this point, look, I don't think any team is taking Markelle Fultz in a trade until he gets back and proves that he can raise his arms above his head and shoot a 15-foot jump shot. So at this point, like, for his sake, I hope this is really what it is. I hope this brings him some peace of mind. You know, I was tweeting about this, like, when this diagnosis came out. Right when we started this podcast, I was dealing with what I thought was a hamstring at the time, a hamstring issue, and I was going to PT, and it was only getting worse, and it was like, you know, I couldn't sleep for more than a couple hours at a time. It just wears on you after a while. Finally, after a month.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah, like, I couldn't sit down.
You were crooked.
Yeah, I couldn't sit.
We had webcams on each other at all times when we record, and I still remember your back. Like, you were not sitting comfortably in that seat, and you were just skewered, like, to 30 degrees.
I know. Yeah, I couldn't sit on my left side. So then, like, finally we figured out it was a bulging disc. I got an injection. That just immediately, like, my symptoms went away within a day. Knock on wood, I haven't had anything since. But, and, you know, this is a small potatoes to what Markelle Fultz has been going through over the last year and a half. But, like, I could sympathize with, it's really frustrating to have your body betraying you. I can only imagine if you're a professional athlete and, like, your livelihood depends on it. And you just can't figure out what's going on. So, at this point, prayers up that, like, this is it. He gets it straightened out. And they can just, like, finally move on. We can forget this year and a half ever happened. And Markelle gets back to being the player he was coming into the draft. With all of that said, we got to talk about Joel Embiid. Because he gave some comments. You know, he hadn't been playing. Like, naturally, I plugged him as an MVP candidate, like, an episode or two ago. And then he just immediately went into the tank and just hasn't been playing all that well lately. So the Sixers held him out of Friday night's game against the Pistons. They just said, like, he's playing too much. He needs a game off. Embiid talks to Keith Pompey of the Philadelphia Inquirer. And he says he's not tired. That's not the reason he's struggling. He's saying it's his role since the Jimmy Butler trade. So he says, and I quote, "I haven't been myself lately. I think it's mainly because of the way I've been used, which is I'm being used as a spacer, I guess, a stretch five, which I'm only shooting 29% from three-point range. But it seems like the past couple games, like with the way I play, our setup, head coach Brett Brown always has me starting on the perimeter, and it really frustrates me. My body feels great, and it's just I haven't been playing well." How nervous should I be, and should Sixers fans be, that he went to the media about this?
It's Joel Embiid who goes to the media regarding everything.
So, usually social media, though.
It doesn't matter. Look, I'm not nervous at all. I mean, he's just trying to send through a message. What bothers me to be honest with you, is Sixers Twitter on this. Like, so many guys came out like, oh, this is what Butler means. Like, he and Butler have beef. Oh, no. This wasn't a Butler-related issue. Well, it is on the court. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's not a Butler problem. Like, they right. don't have beef. They yeah. don't have any problem. It's about, oh, we just got a high-volume all-star player in on our roster, meaning he's going to take up a lot of possessions. How do I maximize myself while balancing those possessions that Jimmy needs to take? Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. Jimmy's a slasher. He's not like a shooter. He's not Steph Curry. He's a slasher. So mm-hmm. he gets to the cup a lot. Meaning that if Joel Embiid is down by the rim, he occupies that space. Then you have Jimmy's defender. You'll have Joel Embiid's defender right there, clocking the lane completely for a Jimmy Butler drive, which... Okay. is a good play. That's usually a high percentage play if he's given the space.
Yeah.
That means Embiid needs to step out a little bit more, and he feels uncomfortable with that because he's been beasting down low all year. He's right. been fouling out fools left and right. And all. I mean, look, he could have written a children's book called How to Foul Out a Guy. I mean, yeah. that's what he's done. And obviously, he just wants to maintain that success, and he's challenging the coaching staff to figure out a way to you know, apply them both at the same time. Look, Jimmy Butler was asked about this, mm-hmm. and he had a very mature response, and also said, you know, Joel is our best player.
Yeah,
which, like, take note of that, by the way. Like, game recognizes game,
right? Yeah, I mean, I'm not super concerned about it. Like, there's no way, at least that I know of publicly, to track, like, where a player is at all times on the court.
Mm.
His three-point attempts have not significantly gone up or down since the Butler trade.
Right.
Which is, again, not a perfect measure of this, but just to give some perspective, he was shooting 4.2 threes in 35 minutes per game in the 14 games before the Butler trade. He's at 4.1 threes and 33.8 minutes in the 14 games since. So, you know, a lot of those are the YOLO threes that both you and I could live without.
Oh, God.
Yep. And like, I agree. I mean, he probably is not getting as many touches down low as he was before the trade. But as you said, like, that's in part because Butler's a slasher and in part because the Sixers just need more spacing in general. Like, we'll see what happens after December 15th, when all these guys who were signed as free agents can be traded. We'll see what happens after the buyout happens, and, like, maybe they bring in someone that way. I don't think the Sixers team you see right now is the Sixers team that will be together come April 15th when the playoffs start. And frankly, this is why you trade for Jimmy Butler in November instead of at the trade deadline, because it's going to take time for these guys to figure out the best ways to play together. But, yes. You know, Brett Brown was saying, like, I don't think this is a Jimmy Butler problem. Like, I think Jimmy Butler only increases the likelihood of us having better spacing. What he didn't say, but what I think he alluded to, and what I think is the long-term concern for the Sixers team, this is a Ben Simmons problem.
Yeah.
Like, you need, if to maximize Ben Simmons, you need four spacers around him, unless he's willing to take jump shots and can hit them at a semi-regular rate. Joel Embiid operates best on the block, as you said, and Jimmy Butler is a great cutter as well. So you've got three guys who do a lot of their damage near the basket, and, you know, that's the million-dollar question hanging over the Sixers team, ultimately. I think Embiid and Butler can work together long term. I think Embiid and Simmons can work, but I don't know if you're, like, going to maximize either guy with them playing alongside one another. That said, I'm not saying the Sixers need to trade Simmons right now, and if they do ultimately decide to go that route, they need to get just a monster offer to even consider it,
mm-hmm.
given his upside, his age, the amount of team control left on him. You know, like, this isn't going to be like a Kawhi Leonard, we get DeMar DeRozan, Jakob Poeltl. Like, no, that's, you got to start with like a top 20 player and go from there. But, you know, I think that's kind of the question looming over the fit of Embiid and Butler and Simmons is like, can this work if Simmons doesn't have a jump shot? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I know who that player is, by the way. I've brought him up a couple times.
You have.
Damian Lillard.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. It's a really... I would be... Because, like, that could help Portland get unstuck, too. That would be a really interesting trade. I don't know that I don't know that I say no to it. Like, I would really have to think long and hard about... Because, like, you're right. Like, a Lillard, Butler, Embiid big three is pretty ridiculous. It's just, like, that,
you know... Solves all the spacing issues.
It does. Immediately. It does. It's just, you know, Lillard is older and is a worse defender, but... Yeah, that might be a sacrifice you make at a certain point.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, the defense is not there, but here's the thing. I actually had a tweet about this today. I don't think people have recognized just how good Dame is as an offensive player.
Yeah.
You know, we all talk about, you know, or even back in the day, oh, Carmelo Anthony is such the most natural scorer in the league. Now it's KD. Now it's Kyrie. You know, well, it was never Kyrie, but he was brought up in that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know who should have been brought up in that conversation? Dame.
Yeah.
He's over the past 4 years, he's averaged 26.4 points a game.
Mm.
And has done so while taking over 8 threes a game and 7 free throws. Oh, plus 90% from the free throw line during that time.
I guess that's good. Is that good?
Yeah. That's pretty good. Sure as hell beats Ben Simmons from the line, at least.
Right.
No, but I'm just saying, I get... You know, the potential of Ben.
Yeah.
I'm not being, you know, dumb here and saying, oh, he's not going to turn into anything. Of course he is.
Right.
Like, this is a guy who's, you know, he's that triple-double guy that actually does the triple-double thing without necessarily stat padding while also playing defense.
Right.
So it's not the Russell Westbrook triple-double going on there. It's a legitimate thing where he just, you know, kind of waddles into triple-doubles coincidentally.
Right.
And when you have that size and the ability to handle the ball, pass, defend so many levels, like he can defend, I would go as far as he can actually defend the rim as a shot blocker down the line, like legitimately. Yeah. And he can also guard ones and twos and threes. Like there's no position he can't guard really. So there's obviously a lot of potential there.
Mm-hmm.
But man, a Dame, Butler, Embiid trio. If you also succeed in retaining J.J. Redick in that trade,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a foursome right there that offensively, at least, can put the rest of the East on notice.
Yeah.
Like, you have everything. You have the greatest post players since Shaq.
Mm-hmm.
You have one of the best two-way wings in the entire league in Butler. And then you have one of the most pure scorers we've actually ever seen at the point guard position.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on now. Like, I know Philly fans will be like, no, but we love Ben. Hey, man, I do too. I get it. But you cannot tell me that on some level, that's not attractive.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole point of, like, this is what I would term a challenge trade, where it's like, both teams don't immediately say no to this, I don't think, or they shouldn't.
Right.
Like, that's one worth... Like, really sitting down and being like, all right, what do we hope to accomplish this year? What's our plan 3 years down the line, 5 years down the line? Does this core have championship upside? If not, maybe you take the gamble. It's a really interesting idea. And you're right. It would totally, like, all of Joel Embiid would not go back to Keith Pompey if they make that trade. Because, I really think that's what it comes down to. It's not an Embiid-Jimmy thing. It's an Embiid-Ben thing. And that went unsaid, mm-hmm. but... You know, that's, again, it's just like hovering over the organization. And it will be until Ben can start shooting jumpers.
And also, the Ben-Joel thing, it's not just playing-wise.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We've heard a few rumblings. Not that they're, you know, nothing negative, just that they're not really engaging one another, which means that there is going to be a cap on their chemistry. And here's the thing with Dame, which has... been grossly underreported for years now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's a locker room leader. He's a really good guy. Mm-hmm. And he, much like Joel and Jimmy, he also works his ass off. Not saying that Ben doesn't, because mm-hmm. Ben sure as hell works his ass off. I'm just saying that you, there's not going to be anything on Lillard where you go, oh, he's not putting in the work. Right. Oh, he's absolutely putting the work. And he's a great communicator, great teammate. So you won't get, you know, another introvert. Mm-hmm. You'll actually get a guy who can come in and say, hey, you know what, guys, let's lift it up and all that. And he would also have the respect of Jimmy immediately.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah. It'd be really interesting. It's, I mean...
It would.
Look, this Sixers team's going to be a drama... It's like... the Bulls are like a bad drama-filled mess. The Sixers are a good drama-filled mess. But, like, there's some stuff percolating that...
The Bulls are Days of Our Lives. The Sixers are like a CW show. It's entertaining.
I was going to say they're like Grey's Anatomy. Like, they're successful... But
so everyone's sleeping with one another?
Yeah, or dying, which or happens dying. To be the case. Might be the perfect analogy, in fact. All right, Mort, before we wrap up, I think we should at least talk a few minutes about Rick Bucher had a column last week on Bleacher Report titled, Why Doesn't Anyone Want to Play with LeBron Anymore? And it really, I mean, it dominated every NBA conversation for a couple days, at least that I saw. I think mostly it was the quotes from Kevin Durant that seemed to really pique people's interest. So I'm going to read them out loud right now. You know, he was talking, again, like why certain stars in particular might not want to join LeBron. And he said,
right,
it depends on what kind of player you are. If you're Kyle Korver, then it makes sense because Kyle Korver in Atlanta was the bulk of the offense and he's not a number one option at all, not even close. So his talents benefit more from a guy who can pass and penetrate and get him open. If you're a younger player like a Kawhi, trying to pair him with LeBron James doesn't really make sense. Kawhi enjoys having the ball in his hands, controlling the offense, dictating the tempo with his post-ups. It's how he plays the game. A lot of young players are developing that skill. They don't need another guy. So, Mort, I mean, the Lakers' mm-hmm. whole plan... Once they couldn't get Paul George and LeBron this summer, was, all right, let's get LeBron, turn our attention next summer. We got Kawhi, we got KD, you know, we have
right.
Jimmy Butler, we have a bunch of free agent wings, we have, you know, if they're not sold on Lonzo or they think Lonzo can play the two, we have Kemba Walker, I don't think Kyrie is necessarily an option, but as you said, Eric Bledsoe, Boogie Cousins, if he comes back, and yeah,
lots,
fine.
Lots like, of guys.
Yeah, there are a lot of free agents. How worried should Lakers fans be about KD saying these things?
First and foremost, I just want to point something out. You know, we've seen on Twitter, at least, I know Twitter can be a cesspool of ignorance.
Correct.
That, you know, we've seen a lot of people on Twitter go after Kevin Durant's intelligence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that quote just should... kill every ounce of you know that rumor or that thing that he's not intelligent, because look at the way he just laid everything out. Mm-hmm. Like, that dude understands the game to a perversely good degree.
Yeah,
and we really need to give him credit for being a smart guy.
Yeah.
All right, moving on from that, you know, I think it truly depends on your mindset more so than your skill set. I get what Durant is saying, and he's right. He's absolutely right. But if you're a guy who has those abilities, but you're also wired in a different way where you can share the spotlight,
mm-hmm.
and I'm in particular looking at Dwayne Wade, young Dwayne Wade.
Yeah.
If you're wired to being willing to share the spotlight and you're wired to wanting to win more so than anything else,
mm-hmm.
then I think you find a way. Then mm-hmm. I think you look at LeBron and go, you know what? That is one of the best players in the game. Because, honest, I can't right now sit here and say he's the best player in the game. I can't say that right now. There are too many candidates out there
mm-hmm.
in the current climate that are just... I cannot say it right. But he's right there at the very least. Top five player at minimum. Probably top three as well. Of course you look at what he can do. Mm-hmm. Of course you look at how far he can take you. But you also have to factor in age. You also have to factor in what LeBron kind of does. You know, the way that he does things is he's understanding initially. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, he's not, and then he reverts back. So if you're a superstar and you know these things going in, you also know, okay, I have to change my game for the first 20 games. Right. I actually have to like tailor myself to LeBron, and there's no certainty in him not going back and just playing his own style, because LeBron is going to LeBron regardless of what I do, regardless of the status that I have. Mm-hmm. Even Kevin Durant, a guy who plays mostly off the ball, a guy who can play with Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and Klay Thompson. I mean, even him, who would theoretically fit very well next to LeBron, mm-hmm. could have troubles playing with LeBron because the change in mindset might occur whenever LeBron feels like it. And Brian Windhorst had a piece on LeBron's relationship with Wade, yeah. where he also more or less stated that LeBron, you know, is a weird cat. Like, he loves to have these close relationships, but business be business, boy.
Right.
Like, if something comes up that is more important for him than that relationship, mm-hmm. or, you know, whatever, that takes precedent. Like, LeBron will change his mindset immediately.
Yeah.
Like, he will switch priorities on you. And if that's the case, bye-bye.
Right. Right.
So, you know, I think they know that he's king. Mm-hmm. He knows that he's king, and there's a certain fear factor involved with that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the problem for the Lakers looking ahead to 2019 is if those top three wings, if KD, Jimmy, and Kawhi don't want to go there, you have, in theory, you have your franchise point guard in Lonzo. In theory, you've got your wing. Yeah, I know. In theory, I said. But all even right, if you don't, enough. Like, it's Kemba or bust, basically, because Kyrie already said he's staying in Boston. So, unless DeMarcus Cousins comes back and mm-hmm. is the Boogie of old, which, you know, given the history of Achilles injuries, doesn't seem all that likely. Well, I mean, we'll yeah. see. Like, the jury very much remains out. Like, to me, he feels like the biggest wild card on the free agent market next summer. But, like, I mean, Klay Thompson would be a perfect fit for that Lakers team.
Yes.
But yes. I don't think he's leaving. I was just
about to say that.
But why would he leave the Warriors? He's not
going to
leave.
No, he's not going to. No, no. But we're talking hypotheticals right. here. And you're right. Like, that would be the one guy
yeah.
where it would make absolute sense. Because here's the thing about Klay, right? He doesn't care. He mm-hmm. is so zen. It's yeah. not even a matter of their games fitting seamlessly, because they do. Klay is a catch-and-shoot guy, mm-hmm. primarily. So, obviously, you know, that plays right into LeBron's strength.
Right.
But Klay is just like, oh, what? Is there drama? I don't right. know. I just woke up.
Right.
Like, strolls late into practice. By the way, we need to speak about this at some point. Like, apparently, Klay Thompson is late for practice on a routinely basis. And we never really hear about it or any fines or whatever. Uh-huh. These Warriors must have a very lax set of rules. I kind of dig it.
If you win three titles in 4 years, you probably right. get a little more leeway than the Bulls.
I'm just imagining Klay coming into practice in like slippers yeah. and just going, hey guys.
With Rocco.
Not saying a word. Yeah. But like Klay would be, you know, the obvious yeah. candidate for it. But here's the thing though. You can say that with Klay and every damn team in the league.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was lusting after him as a free agent target, but then it was like, it just became right. so obvious. But so that's kind of my point, is like, if the Lakers decide, you know, if they're really still trying to angle after free agency, but there really aren't that many guys who make sense or who seem like they would be willing to take that backseat to LeBron, is their mm-hmm. best route to acquire their second star? Should they maybe consider a trade? Should they go after a guy like a Bradley Beal before they even get
with,
to free
with
agency?
Who, though? With who?
With some of their young guys. Lonzo, Ingram, Kuzma, Hart. And then salary filling as well.
Kuzma's built up too much equity. Yeah. In the fan base in Los Angeles, I feel. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be a hard sell right. from you know, the PR perspective. Lonzo, you know, oh, he is so good defensively. Mm-hmm. I mean, he really is, but offensively, he's so raw. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anyone really expected him to be this raw. And then obviously there's the whole Voldemort ankle. Like he's,
right.
You know, he's been silent this year.
Thankfully.
Primarily, you know, because of LeBron is my theory.
Yes.
Now imagine Lonzo Ball on a team where there's no LeBron.
Right.
Yeah, like Washington.
Oh, I know, exactly.
Ernie Grunfeld versus Voldemort.
Yeah.
Could you imagine, you know? No. I just don't think that package is there, man.
I mean, it would have to involve KCP most likely, but he can veto any trade, so that makes it complicated.
It's Josh Hart, but like you shouldn't trade Josh Hart.
Ingram? Like I feel like Ingram's probably the centerpiece.
But haven't we figured out Ingram by now?
If you say Andrew Wiggins 2.0, Lakers fans are never going to watch it. Okay.
No. Yeah. It's not that bad. It's just, but we've kind of seen the writing on the wall a little bit. Like he's not going to be that secondary superstar. I mean, yeah, there's time, right. And he might. You know, I remember when he was drafted. I routinely made this comparison. I said he could have a Luol Deng career where he like made a couple All-Star teams. Mm-hmm. He's a fine starter for 10 plus years, mm-hmm. and that's about it. That's not a bad career, by the way. That's not being a bust. That's a positive. Mm-hmm. Right now, he seems to be playing into that.
I think the problem with Ingram, like I'm not giving up on him long term. The problem is he's 21. LeBron is 32, 33. Like their timeline.
He's from he's going to be 34 this month.
Right. So like by the time Ingram is ready to be a centerpiece of a championship team, LeBron Jr. is going to be in the league.
Oh God, that whole angle. Yeah.
But you know what? So like I think if you're the Lakers, I get Ingram still got, you know, some pretty considerable upside, and LeBron thinks he's going to be the next big thing. But if you're the Lakers and you're looking at 2019 free agency and you're seeing like it's bleaker than you would hope, or it seems to be at this moment, do you go and move a guy like Ingram to get more help? And then you can turn around to these free agents and say, all right, well now you're playing with LeBron and Bradley Beal and someone else, making it more enticing. Come be our third member of our big three.
Yeah, but then you already spend some money, at least on getting a guy who's on a bigger salary. So here's the preferred option if you ask me. So you should maybe trade Brandon Ingram and maybe even a draft pick and a couple guys to get a different guy on a rookie deal. I don't know who. But someone who's better than Ingram, who's still on a rookie deal, so you actually maintain that salary flexibility.
Yeah.
You know, come free agency.
Right.
I don't know who. Again, that's like,
I know.
Just hypothetically.
That's the tricky thing. It's almost like LeBron chose the Lakers for reasons that don't involve basketball. Because if you consider the basketball fit, it's just, it's becoming progressively more difficult to imagine him winning a championship in L.A.
Just out of curiosity, if the Lakers were really open-minded and they were to package Kyle Kuzma and Brandon Ingram, like what could you get for those two?
I would assume something pretty good.
Right?
I would think so.
Yeah. Like that's when we can talk about like Bradley Beal and those guys, like all-star level players.
Yeah, like they have the packages to make something happen. Here's an idea. Brandon Ingram for Jaylen Brown.
I mean, we don't really have any Boston fans left anyway because you scared them off like a year ago. But how quickly would they say no?
Boston?
Yeah.
Probably pretty quickly. But, I mean, Brown has struggled a bit this season.
Oh yeah. No. Look, I'm there. Yeah. I think that's a lot. I think that's somewhat fair value, honestly.
Right.
I anticipate that Boston will be all high and mighty about it.
Yeah.
Go, nah.
Yeah. I would think so too.
But I mean, yeah. I think those two values align a little bit more favorably than most would have you believe.
I guess
Brown would.
You know, you're talking about a guy. I don't think salary wise, again, it's going to be tough. It's just going to be tough for LA to make something work in general, unless you get Rondo or KCP on board. But how about a CJ McCollum or a Dame?
Oh, okay. Oh, wait, hang on. So we just shipped Dame to Philly.
Right. Undo that.
So now the follow up. Yeah. No. So now the follow up is CJ McCollum to the Lakers. The Portland Trailblazers just blow it up. Yeah. No. Okay. In seriousness, Dame to LA. That's an interesting one because Dame and LeBron, they should be able to function, right? He's Kyrie Irving on steroids, but just better. I mean, even better than that. He's so much more potent offensively. Mm-hmm. Like from a leadership perspective, he's better. I want to say he's actually a better defender as well, even though he's not great. He actually makes an effort that Kyrie frequently doesn't. Yeah, I mean, depending on the package.
Yeah.
I think those two could work.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I'm not going to be surprised. I know there's rumors linking the Lakers to, Trevor Ariza or something like that. I feel they got to look bigger. I think they're going to go hard. Or I think they should, at least. They have to have their sights set on a bigger prize. Because I think if they're really pinning their hopes to 2019 free agency, they are setting themselves up for a massive disappointment. And I think, that's...
Well, it's the Lakers. They're used to that.
I know. But, I think those KD comments were really illuminating. And in why you can't pin all of your hopes on free agency. Even if you have LeBron James and even if you're the Lakers, some guys may just not want that.
Oh, I mean, look, that thing, about putting all your eggs in the free agency basket, you and I have spoken about this at length.
Yeah.
It is always a bad idea. Right. Look, there are three ways you can improve your team. It's free agency, it's trades, and it's the draft. Mm-hmm. To me, if I ever ran a ball club, free agency would be the lowest on that list.
Yeah.
And I get the whole aspect of trades, you have to give up to get something. Right, but at times a trade can do wonders. Just look at Toronto right now.
Mm, yeah.
Sometimes it's just worth it, and it takes you from point A to point B. So, depending on who you get. My question to you, Bri, is this. At what point do we stop considering what LeBron wants, given his age? At what point do we stop going, oh, they have LeBron, so that means they need to go into win now mode? At what point do we just go, oh, you know what? Shh, just focus on yourself. Well, just let LeBron be LeBron. Just focus on your development.
He's signed for 3 years with that fourth-year player option, so I can tell you what's going to happen to that fourth-year player option if they go that route.
And so what? At that point, he's what, 36?
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah. I don't know, man. The Lakers are going to be... they're just going to be really interesting to follow. Of the teams I'm most excited to see what happens with over the next couple months, them and Philly are close to the top of the list for me.
Yeah, well, I could see that. But I'm just saying, LeBron at 36, then they've had him for 3 years. That's a lot of tickets, a lot of jerseys sold.
Yeah, yeah. No titles.
Well, I mean, come on. Let's be honest. Outside of Golden State, where could LeBron have gone that would have gotten them a title?
I think he would have had a legit shot in Philly.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. I mean, I get that he's a better jump shooter now than he was before. Mm-hmm. He's still not one of those natural spacers. From a shooting perspective, he's very similar to Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, no, I think they could have. But, couldn't they have made the same trade they made for Jimmy?
Oh, just for a shooter, you mean?
Well, no, use the same guys. Just trade.
Oh, for Jimmy? Yeah. Oh, so it's Embiid, Ben, Jimmy, and LeBron?
Mm-hmm. Or, again, then you could start looking at Ben trades.
Well, okay, now you're enticing me. Because then if you actually had done that, and you then moved Ben for Dame, well, okay, now we're talking about it. Financial flexibility or financials that just don't work.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I get your drift, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get your drift. Even so, I'm not on board with the whole, hey, let's change our entire, you know, structure of the team to fit LeBron, who's going to be 34.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just not down with that at this point. I don't think teams should do it. Like, we continuously see where he leaves teams when he goes away, you know?
Right.
Like,
well, and I think
they have no assets.
I think in part that's probably why he chose the Lakers, because they're more of a blank slate. And he knew, like, the Sixers aren't trading Embiid. If he doesn't work with Embiid, they're stuck together. But with the Lakers, there isn't a single untouchable on that roster. Or there shouldn't be. I mean, you know, they have a bunch of young, intriguing guys, but none of those guys rise to the level of, we will not trade this guy for anyone.
Yeah. So basically, he came to the Lakers to be a GM.
Yeah. And to make movies.
All right. And to make movies. Look, I saw that Amy Schumer film. It was not good.
Oh, come on. He was very good in that.
He was? You think so?
Yeah. Well, he was funny. Well, he was one of the best parts. Him and John Cena were the highlights of that movie.
I don't know. I couldn't concentrate over the fake hairline.
Mm, that's fair. Well, on that note, I think we're going to wrap up here. Thank you to all for listening. As always, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. I'll call up the National Podcasters Association and tell them that we're working too hard.